Welcome into this week's episode of Three True Values as we recap the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament. We talk about those first two rounds, the upsets that happened, the coaching news that has fallen out from it all, and then get you ready to do it all again this weekend as we get ready for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. That's right, we have just over 2 weeks left of the college basketball season, and we're going to soak it all in. So here in this first segment, we will be going through all the news of the last week. I know it might take a little while, but we're going to hit on everything that you saw in round one and round two there. And like I said, some coaching news that has come out since all of that happened. Then, second segment, we will come back, might touch on any coaching news that we don't get to here in the first segment. Then we will go ahead and preview the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight as you get ready to watch even more college basketball. A lot of high-level college basketball as some of the top teams in the sport remain in the NCAA tournament field at this moment. So as we go through, there's no other place we can start other than the upsets, because that's what we all love about the opening weekend of March Madness. I'm sorry if your bracket is broken, but that's kind of what happens this time of year. I expect that everyone's bracket at this point has different damages all across it. Oakland knocks off Kentucky. How about that? The biggest upset of the weekend, the one that everyone was talking about, Jack Golke goes crazy from three, hits 10 three-pointers, has since capitalized with a ton of NIL deals, Buffalo Wild Wings among them. I've seen so many others floating around as well. But it was more than that for this Kentucky program. It was a referendum on the John Calipari era, what that has become, the failures that they have seen in the postseason in recent years. He just has not brought them to the pinnacle of college basketball in way too long for that Kentucky fan base. So frustrations have understandably boiled over there. People were talking, is it time to end the John Calipari era? Well, today, we're recording this, on Tuesday night. It will go up on Wednesday. So yesterday, for those of you listening, when this comes out, we find out John Calipari will return as the coach at Kentucky. We knew this news, good or bad, would be coming out today. That's why this podcast is coming out a day later, so that we can spend a little bit of time on it here, because I think it's quite interesting and it's a huge point of discussion in college basketball this year and next year, because there is an expectation that next season will be big for the future of John Calipari. Of course, these last few days have been big for his future. Mitch Barnhart, though, the athletic director, seemed to be in alignment that he will get one more season. There will likely be some kind of overhaul here, whether that's with the roster, the staff, the support staff, whether that's bringing in more people, changing the personnel that you have, whatever the case is, Kentucky is going to have to go all in here on this season. And that's where it's going to be interesting, because the fans were out on John Calipari. They wanted change. They had already started discussing who they would like to see as the head coach next season. Anyone but John Calipari was pretty much on their mind for the past few days. However, now that he's back, can that athletic department and this basketball program bring in enough support to get the NIL funds that they need to build the roster that Kentucky must have to go into next season as a real and true contender? Because if this team, of all teams, I know that we have the young versus old dialogue. I just did a column for On3 about the struggles that young players, specifically freshmen, have had in the NCAA tournament translating what they were rated and even sometimes their regular season success into postseason wins and postseason contribution towards winning. The numbers are not good. Young teams just don't succeed at a high level anymore. College basketball is in a different place than it was last time John Calipari won a national title. It's in a different place than the last time that John Calipari made it past the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. He has just one win since NIL and the transfer portal really took off. So for John Calipari, he's going to have to change the way he does things. Does that mean not bringing in five stars? Of course not. He's got some already lined up. He's got a really good recruiting class, as he always does, coming in for this 2024-2025 season. But how he augments that will be the deciding factor on his future as the Kentucky basketball coach. So, like I said, NIL funds going to be important because they're not a complete roster. Now, if they can get a couple of these guys to come back for a second year, a third or fourth year for some of the guys who were role players on this team, yes, that's going to be huge. But you're going to have to go land at least one or two out of the transfer portal who are going to be real difference makers if you want to find the success that you need to have. So it'll be interesting. We're going to have to watch it all offseason. How does John Calipari rally this fan base? Can he rally this fan base? Because you cannot afford to have donors stop giving out the money, because that's when this roster is going to run into real obstacles, is when they can't afford to put it together the way that they need to. Kentucky, always going to be a big storyline. No coaching change, but still the coaching situation is going to be a huge topic. We'll talk more about it in the postseason, in the preseason next year, throughout the season next year. But right now, let's get back into the madness of March, because we had more upsets than just that one. Duquesne, under Keith Dambrot, announced that he will be retiring after the NCAA tournament. They rally behind him and knock off BYU as an 11 seed. Great story there. Everyone playing for their coach, extending out his career. Then you look elsewhere in the bracket, in that same region. Yale knocks off Auburn in a completely unexpected upset in my book. I thought that Auburn team was really upset-proof in a lot of ways with their depth, with the way that they played. But then they lose Chad Baker-Mazzara to a flagrant 2 foul, which gets him ejected from the game, completely shifted not only the momentum of that one, but also kind of negated one of the two things that makes Auburn so special, with some of their depth taken away. So that was big there. James Madison pulls off an upset against Wisconsin. That was a popular pick. I thought that game was pretty 50-50. I went with Wisconsin, but have no issues with that James Madison team. I thought they were really good. TJ Bickerstaff is a really good player. They've got plenty of other pieces. Terrence Edwards, who is now in the transfer portal, by the way, looking for a new home after their coach, Mark Byington, accepts the Vanderbilt job. So outside of that, in the bottom half of the bracket, we didn't get a couple of the upsets that we were kind of looking for, kind of hoping for. We did not get McNeese State. We did not get Samford. We did get Oregon, though, over South Carolina. We talked about it. This Oregon team is a different team than what we had seen previously. They are healthier, and they looked like a real threat. They took Creighton to double overtime in the second round as well. So this was a real team that you have to talk about in a different way based on the injuries. They proved that and had a really nice run here in March. Dana Altman will be back next year. There were rumors about his future, potentially retirement. That's not happening. He will be back. He will be coaching this team, and we'll see if they can get rid of some of those injury-plagued stretches that they've had over recent years. On the other side, Grand Canyon knocks off St. Mary's. That one was a big surprise to me. I really like this St. Mary's team. I thought they could make a deep run into March. But Grand Canyon behind Tyron Grant Foster, Bryce Drew coaching that team. Yes, they were another one that their resume kind of said, hey, look out, this could be an upset team. They were able to pull it off. Great story there. They then lose to Alabama in the next round. However, in that one. Just to run you through the rest of the kind of eye-popping results, Dayton with a massive comeback ends the game on a 24-4 run against Nevada. Steve Alford, after the game, kind of took responsibility, put it on himself. His history of disappointment in March even pointed to his past stops and how disappointed he is in the results that they have gotten along the way. Purdue survives. They didn't lose to a 16 seed. They also kind of wiped the floor with Utah State in that second round. So don't have to talk about Purdue and their struggles anymore. They are a real contender. They go up against Gonzaga, which we will talk about in the next segment. NC State, again, we will get to them in more depth in the next segment because they're still dancing as an 11 seed. They knock off Texas Tech. Then they knock out Oakland in overtime. They will get Marquette. Like I said, we will talk more about that one on the other side. But Washington State knocks out a real upset contender in Drake. They were able to hold on. That was a close game, a really good one, 66 to 61. One of the games that I expected to be really tight, two of them really. 8-9 matchups. No, Texas A&M blows out Nebraska. That one was never really a contest. Same on the other side of the bracket. Michigan State opened the tournament with a dominant performance against Mississippi State. I do want to talk now about what UConn did this week. And I know the one seed's expected to advance, but UConn did it in such dominant fashion. I think this UConn team was primed to become back-to-back champions, and they further cemented my belief that they are able to pull that off, that they have everything they need to be that team to win consecutive championships with the performances this week. Donovan Klingon looked outstanding. His defensive impact, the way he was moving around the court, I thought that it was a whole nother level for him. I thought he played really good. Stephon Castle contributing, Tristan Newton still right at the top of his game. That team is just so complete, it's going to be nearly impossible to knock them off. We'll talk more about their path to a championship on the other side. But the last thing that we do have to touch on, we've got to talk about it before we can advance here to the next conversation, before we can get into the future and start forecasting games. We got to talk about overtime between Houston and Texas A&M. I was there, I covered the Memphis Regional, got to see Clemson advance on one side of the bracket. Houston gets through on the other side. But in the last game on Sunday night, Houston, Texas A&M storms back with an incredible comeback to tie the game on an Anderson Garcia three-pointer as the clock expires. We head to overtime, and then Juwan Roberts, the outstanding big man for Houston, big part of their success, playing injured in this game, sees a ball headed out of bounds, dives to save it, and yes, he took me out on national television. It came right over the scores table. His knee connected with my head. Laptop got shut. Water went flying somewhere. Phone ended up behind me. I couldn't find it for a few minutes. Some fans, thankfully, pointed me in the right direction to get to that as my watch started buzzing because people had seen it. And I had friends, family, coworkers, everyone blowing up my phone with messages. Some of them asking if I was okay, others just letting me know that I was on television. But yeah, it was an interesting experience. Jawan's foot ends up getting stuck in the chair next to me. So as I assume that the camera panned away and followed the rest of the action that was going on, I was actually more focused on trying to move this chair to get him out of it so that he could then get back onto the court. He eventually did. They had to stop play because it was taking him so long to be able to get back onto the floor. But yes, everything is okay. Laptop survived. I survived. No damage. Talked to Juwan after the game. He was okay. No injuries from that. And so all is well that ends well. But I want to thank everyone who did reach out, everyone who laughed about it on social media. I've seen posts about it. I appreciate it. And yes, I guess I got my little 5 minutes of fame from March Madness. Now, though, it's time to focus on the basketball ahead of us. We'll talk about the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight on the other side, right here on Three True Values. Welcome back into Three True Values as we talk Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. We have a bracket ahead of us. It has shrunk down from 68 to 16, and we have to talk about the games that are upcoming because it will set up the Final Four, and we know that is the pinnacle of college basketball. So here we go as we get into it. We will start in the East region. That is the top left corner of the bracket if you are looking at it right now. UConn takes on San Diego State. How about a rematch of the national title game last season? UConn dominated in that one. I expect them to dominate again in this one. I think UConn has gotten even better than they were last season. San Diego State, a little bit different of a team than they were last season, but I still don't think that they can compete with UConn here. I think UConn should take care of business in that one. Not much other analysis that I have for that Sweet 16 game, other than I would be surprised if San Diego State won. On the bottom half in the East region, though, we've got Illinois against Iowa State. I think this is going to be one of the best games of the round. I really like this matchup. Illinois, Terrence Shannon, Marcus Damask. They have really gotten things clicking in the last few weeks. This Illinois team looks like a real contender. And if UConn wasn't in their way, I would love their path to the Final Four in any other region. I would be really heavy on Illinois in any other region here. I'm going to pick them over Iowa State. Iowa State's been a little bit more hot and cold, but Iowa State, we saw what they did to Houston. And this Houston team is a one seed, a deserving one seed. A team with a path towards the Final Four. So don't be surprised if Iowa State comes out and plays really well. I really, really like this matchup. I'm taking Illinois in this one, but Iowa State no doubt will have something to say about it, and they've got the firepower to back that up. If we take a look across at the South region, we've got Houston going up against Duke, a really, really intriguing matchup. Houston survives Texas A&M. Some questions about their depth. They had a walk-on in to finish that one. Now they face Duke. Can they get some of the injuries cleared up? Can they get a healthier Juwan Roberts? Maybe have a little bit fresher legs, avoid foul trouble. That was a big issue for them against Texas A&M. Can they do all those things and beat this talented Duke team that has really found something with Jared McCain being able to elevate and perform on the biggest stage here? I think Houston is just going to be able to be a little bit more physical, play a little bit harder than this Duke team. That's why I've got them advancing, but it will be a really, really fun matchup. And I think people will be split on this one. Even if I don't see it as one of these classic games that probably goes down to the wire, I can see a situation where Duke kind of pulls away a little bit. I can see a situation where Houston pulls away a little bit. But it will be interesting nonetheless to see how it does play out. Talented team, some returning players, some veteran guys, but they do rely some on the freshmen to make an impact versus Houston, not as heralded as guys on that team. Far fewer former five-star recruits, guys like that. You've got more Jamal Shedd, career college basketball players, Juwan Roberts, guys like that who have kind of been there and done that. LJ Cryer with his shooting on the perimeter as well. Then you go to the bottom of this bracket and you've got Marquette, who has kind of breezed through the beginning of March Madness. They play a 15 seed and then a 10 seed. And now they get an 11 seed. So they might go through three double-digit seeds on their way to an Elite Eight. I expect them to do that. Tyler Kolek looks healthy. He has looked really good. Cam Jones, he's in that backcourt as well. Osso Iguodaro, they just are a really complete basketball team. They're playing really well. They let Colorado hang around for quite a while, but they were able to get the job done there. Colorado, a team that don't forget, has three projected NBA draft picks on it. So they are no slouches. They had the talent level, and those three guys really kind of showed out for at times during that one, particularly Tristan Da Silva for the Buffaloes. But they got past Colorado. Now they face NC State, who doesn't have that kind of firepower. But they are on this kind of magical run here. They've won so many games in a row. They've knocked off so many teams that they were supposed to lose to. But this is the best team that they played since they went through Duke and North Carolina a little over a week ago in the ACC tournament. Can they just keep winning games? Can they keep doing this? DJ Burns, of course, presents a matchup nightmare for Marquette. But I think Marquette rolls through this one. Don't think they'll have too many problems. We head to the Midwest region where Purdue and Gonzaga meet, and a really interesting one. Zach Edey, Purdue, they've looked dominant. They've really taken care of business. There have been no doubts in either of their games so far, but now they face a Gonzaga team that is red hot. They've looked like a different team in the past couple of months, soaring up the computer data. You know that I was a big proponent for them as Selection Sunday neared. They are a really, really good basketball team that maybe doesn't get the respect that they deserve. End up blowing out a Kansas team that, yes, had some dysfunction. They had kind of fallen apart there at the end, but still took care of McNeese State without any doubt. A team that a lot of people had, I had, as the top upset candidate among the 12 seeds. So Gonzaga, how good are they? Can they figure out a way to stop Zach Edey? Those are going to be the two questions that get answered this week as we watch these two teams face off. I just suspect that Zach Edey will be able to do enough to get Purdue through this one. So I am going to pick Purdue here, but I think Gonzaga presents them by far their toughest challenge to date in the NCAA tournament. Then on the bottom, we have I love the Illinois-Iowa State matchup, but this one might be my favorite matchup of the entire NCAA tournament. Now we're going to talk, I'm sure in the Final Four, I'll find something that I really like, but Creighton against Tennessee, Dalton Connect, Josiah Jordan-James, so Santiago Vescovi, Zakai Ziegler going up against, with Jonas Adu in the middle there, don't want to leave him out, against Creighton's lineup with Ryan Kalkbrenner, three-time All-Big East defender, or defensive player of the year, excuse me, Baylor Shireman, who I have projected, I have told everyone, he is going to become a March Madness star. He hasn't necessarily had that big stage, huge moment in front of the world, but he has been really good. So if he can pull this one off, if he can go head-to-head with Dalton Connect and get the better of him, I think that's when you see him probably emerge onto this bigger stage and get that kind of reputation as a March Madness player. But Dalton Connect's going to have something to say about that. Dalton Connect wants that honor as well. So they're going to go back and forth. That Creighton team, also Tyshawn Alexander, Mason Miller, who pretty much just plays defense and shoots threes for the Blue Jays there, plays his role about as well as you could hope for him to. And, of course, Ashworth, who really helped them down the stretch against Oregon. They needed somebody to knock down some shots, to create some scoring, and he did that down the stretch for them in regulation. He kept them in it in overtime as well and really helped the Blue Jays pull away as they end up with a 13-point win in double overtime. How rare is that? Like, I don't know if I've ever seen that before in basketball. But I'm taking Creighton just barely. I like this Creighton team. I've talked extensively about how in I am on this Creighton team. So yes, I am rolling with them. And that means I'm picking three Big East teams to the Elite Eight of the three that they got into the NCAA tournament field. So yeah, I know the ACC has a lot of complaints about how they were covered, the perception about their league. The Big East has a case to be made. Speaking of the ACC here. Clemson takes on Arizona. The Tigers have made a run here. They knock off Baylor after really leaving no doubt against New Mexico. And now they take on Arizona. They are the only thing in the way of us getting Caleb Love against his old teammates at North Carolina. That is kind of the big marquee March Madness storyline that we all want to see. A couple years ago, it involved North Carolina. It was North Carolina against Duke in the NCAA tournament. The last game for Coach K, can North Carolina send him home? They did that. Now we have a chance for this massive storyline with these former teammates. They face off against each other for the right to go to the Final Four. That would be the biggest money grab. But Clemson's going to have something to say about that. They are playing as a different team than the one that we saw in the ACC tournament, than we saw down the stretch. They have looked really good in the NCAA tournament. I saw it firsthand. Joe Girard, PJ Hall. I think the contribution that they got from RJ Godfrey was as big as anything. Jack Clark, the way he played, because PJ Hall got in some foul trouble, they were unfazed. They played right through that for most of that time that he was on the bench. So Clemson, of course, Chase Hunter was a huge part of that as well. He got back into form, was scoring the ball much better in this round of the tournament than he had previous. So can they knock off Arizona? I'm going to ride with Arizona, but I think Clemson, they're an upset candidate there. They've made it this far. They've kind of overcome the odds. They were underdogs in both of those first two games against an 11 seed. To be an underdog, that tells you what they were overcoming and how much better they played than the expectation to this point in the tournament. And then we've got the last game that we're going to talk about here, North Carolina against Alabama. How about Nate Oates taking his third team in 4 years to the Sweet 16? I even, not just me, but plenty of people, compared this team closer to the team that we saw make a first-round exit against Notre Dame than the ones that we saw make the Sweet 16 last year and 3 years ago. But they got a good draw here. I felt like they were going to be able to get through Charleston kind of regardless of the situation. I just thought the way that they play, the way that Charleston plays, that one was going to be one where they could just kind of make their way through it as long as they were able to score. And I said, a team that puts up 100, not going to lose probably in the NCAA tournament. They get to 109. So that kind of played out how I thought it would. But then when Grand Canyon upsets St. Mary's, that changes everything. Because I think that St. Mary's team probably would have given Alabama a lot of fits. Instead, they get Grand Canyon. They have more talent than the opponent. They're able to pull away in that one. They end up with a double-digit win there. And now they face one seed North Carolina, the weakest of the one seeds. And that's no knock on North Carolina. It's just that those other three had separated themselves from the pack. They have a real chance to make the deepest run in the Nate Oates era and tie the deepest run in Alabama history if they're able, who knows, go past the deepest run in Alabama history. If they are able to just pull off an upset here and then you get things rolling, don't forget they're one of the top five offenses in the country. They were the number one offense before Latrell Wrightsell went down with an injury. So they've got the offensive firepower. It's always been, can they figure out the defense? That has always been the question for this Alabama team. And I'm not sure that they have because, again, they went through two double-digit seeds to get here. But against this North Carolina team, that's where we will find out. I am picking North Carolina because I still have questions about the Alabama defense. But if they come out and look like a good defensive team, if they're performing well on that end of the floor, do not be surprised if we see Alabama coming down the wire really close in this one and have a chance to pull off this upset against North Carolina and upset that storyline that we were talking about, North Carolina and Arizona. The Elite Eight, as we get through this show. Now, we're projecting in the East, UConn against Illinois. I think it'll be the toughest challenge for UConn until probably the national championship. I think that they are a tougher matchup than anyone who comes out of that West region below them. So I am riding with UConn, but I think this is the one. This is the spot. If you think that they're going to be knocked out of the field, here is the opportunity, whether it's Illinois or in Iowa State. But I still think they've got enough. I still think that they should be the favorites in that one. And maybe getting pushed kind of helps them in the Final Four as they face more top quality opponents in those final games of the season. That could be the difference. Getting over this hump, having to face an opponent who's red hot, who's got something in the tank, that could be that boost that we see them get sometimes on the way to a title run. Then I'm projecting Houston against Marquette. I'm going to go Marquette here. I think Houston injuries, depth issues, they're just kind of trying to get through it all. And this Marquette team, they've got those things that Houston is lacking and are coming off of a really easy run in theory to the Elite Eight. So they might be a little bit fresher as well. They go through three double-digit seeds on their way to facing Houston. I think they'll be primed. They'll be ready to go. They'll be fresh. They'll have energy. So I'm going to roll with Marquette to make it to the Final Four there. Purdue against Creighton. I'm going to go Purdue here. But man, I think this will be a good matchup. I'm going to go with Zach Edey, the National Player of the Year. Braden Smith at point guard. He looked healthy. I think that they will have enough. And Creighton, they do rely some on that outside shot. You never know if they go cold, either in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, they could be in a little bit of trouble on offense. North Carolina against Arizona. That's what I'm predicting here in the West. That's the matchup everyone wants to see. And I'm going to ride with North Carolina. I'm sticking with the Tar Heels, Hubert Davis, Armando Bacot, RJ Davis, an All-American. I just think they've got a little bit more. That team, it complements itself so well. Cormac Ryan on the wing has been in kind of a really good form in recent weeks. I like what they've put together for the Tar Heels. They're a number one seed for a reason, and I'm going to roll with them to make it to the Final Four, where they would then meet UConn. So that's it, my projected Final Four heading into the weekend. UConn against North Carolina, Marquette against Purdue. Now, am I supremely confident in all those picks? No. I mean, I've told you the teams that I think can upset the balance of things, the teams that I think could get into that mix. But that's the great thing when we get this deep into it. These teams are so good, they go up against each other, that you cannot predict it with 100% certainty the way you can a 1 versus 16 or a 2 versus 15 in most years. So this is where it gets tough if you're trying to predict who's going to win, but it gets so fun to watch if you are just a fan admiring this game of basketball. There's going to be plenty of great games to talk about next week. We will do that right here on Three True Values. We'll be getting you ready for the Final Four out in Phoenix. Don't miss it right here. Three True Values with your host, James Fletcher.